at the donut.
Are you coming to the tree? They strung up a man, they say he murdered three. Strange things that happen to you, stranger would it be? We never had been high in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. Everyone, welcome to the November edition Exit the Donuts movie review. We got three big ones, but as always, we like to introduce ourselves. What's going on, everyone? My name is Richie. Of course, loving things all movies. I gotta say, we saw some really, really great movies. With us today, we have...
This is Amy. Welcome back.
I'm Mike, and I'll be playing the long-lost robot in space that also is a health consultant. Shoots arrows.
La 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 la. So it's been a while since we've done our last one was really heavy centric on a lot of television shows, and there was a period where there weren't really a lot of movies. And also, we had some great movies that came out. So the big three ones that we're going to discuss today is going to be Interstellar, Christopher Nolan's latest movie. We also have Big Hero 6, which is Disney Animation's latest, not to be confused with Pixar. And we'll see if there's any kind of confusion there. And, of course, the last one that every single teeny bopper and Amy, well, at least Amy's little inner teen, will be, of course, The Hunger Games, Mockingjay, Part 1, because Part 2 won't be here until next November, but it seems there's a lot of action going down, so, all right, guys, let's just go right into it. So, let's start off with Interstellar, Christopher Nolan's newest movie. So, this one, of course, finds Matthew McConaughey as a washed-up pilot, farmer for NASA, however that kind of goes around, and finds himself that NASA, now a rogue department of the government of a soon-to-be-destroyed Earth, is sent on a secret mission to find another habitable planet. In fact, Mike and I were trying to find other habitable planets the other night when I was visiting in St. Louis. That was a lot of fun. In it, he also has Anne Hathaway playing Dr. Brandt, if I'm not mistaken. We have a whole host of other characters, including his daughter, played by three separate actresses, but mostly Jessica Chastain, who I think was really, really fresh. And they also have some usual other Christopher Nolan, actors pop up, Michael Caine being one of the more prominent ones, and surprisingly, some good robots. So the two of you actually saw the movie way before I... And could not have been a more different wavelengths as far as like a spectrum of the enjoyment of that movie. So we're going to go ahead with who liked it the most, which basically is going to be our friend Amy over here. And Amy, tell me what you loved, or actually your overall feelings about Interstellar. Go for it.
It was one of those things. I knew as soon as we walked out of the theater that my impression of the movie was completely different than Mike's, because Mike is usually the first one, as soon as we get out the doors, and he's like, so what'd you think? And he was like completely stone-faced, didn't even say a word. And I'm like, I think that might be my number one movie. And I look at him, and I'm like, and you clearly did not feel the same way. I guess for me, I really like science, and so I was excited to go see a science movie, which, you know, I will say a lot of times the science is over my head, because as much as I'm interested in it, I don't know all the facets of it and whether stuff is realistic or unrealistic. So some of that was I wasn't sure about the science of the movie, but the fact that it had the human element to it and the story between the father and son and daughter was just, I thought it was just really powerful. Not only between Matthew McConaughey's character and his daughter, but between Michael Caine and Dr. Brandt and Dr. Brandt, I just thought it was very cool. I really enjoyed it. It was a long movie, but it didn't feel like a long movie. It moved very, you know, had good pacing, and you never felt like you're kind of watching the clock, like, okay, is it over yet? And, there were a couple moments where you thought they were going to wrap it up, and then it kept going, but there again, it wasn't like a, you know, where you wished they'd ended it when they did. So I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was well acted and directed. But
Michelle, what did you think of the movie, which is clearly not the same as Amy?
So I should say okay. as time has gone on, it's been about 2 weeks, I think, since we've seen it now, maybe a little longer. And I like it less now than I did when I came out of the movie. Oh, I probably would rate it even lower now that I've had time. It's a movie that's going to make you think. So I'm going to give Nolan credit. He's a good director, and he does good films, and this is no exception in the sense that it's a well-crafted film. The acting is very good. Matthew McConaughey, I think played the part that was written for him well. I think it was a very strange part to have as the central part of the story, but I think he played it well. I think all of the various female actors in the movie played their parts well, and I didn't really have a problem with the science. For the most part, I think the science is fine. So is it okay if I talk a little spoiler stuff here?
Let's warn people that a couple of spoilers if you haven't seen the movie, yeah. But let's just go ahead and say that.
So my core problems were with the story itself, and the sort of on-the-nose nature of it the whole way through. Very early on, when before he leaves, he's sitting on the bed talking with his daughter, and he's talking about how when he comes back, they might be the same age. And, like, they continue to talk about relativity and how relativity can make you age at different speeds throughout the film. And it sort of, like, you know, just keeps reminding you, hey, guys, she's going to die before he gets home. She's going to die before he gets home. She's going to die before he gets home. And, you know, and then they inexplicably decide to go to so then they go through a wormhole. So let me say this. I was on board completely, even with the faults with the stuff in the house, with the, you know, I might be the same age as you, until they got to Saturn. When they get to Saturn and they all wake up in the spaceship and they take this big, beautiful picture of Saturn, and Saturn is my favorite space thing. it's gorgeous. And instead of focusing the beauty on Saturn, Nolan uses this giant lens flare to direct your eye away from the most beautiful object in our solar system and toward this little point of light, which is the ship as it's approaching this wormhole. And I'm just like, why? Why? Why are you ruining the imagery? I mean, I should say everyone that I have read has said that this movie has great, beautiful imagery, and I could not disagree more. I think it's the most disappointing I've ever been in a major, big blockbuster feature for space imagery related stuff. Thor has better space imagery, and I just watched Guardians of the Galaxy with my kids again, and Guardians of the Galaxy has much better space imagery. Again, the science isn't what my problem was. My problem was really about the story and how disconnected and disjointed and how many leaps of faith you have to make. And then at the end, there's no cost for anyone. Everything is wrapped up in a tidy little bow. Everybody gets what they want. You spend 3 hours journeying to all these various planets and going through wormholes and orbiting black holes, and he finds himself in floating right next to Saturn, and just as a spaceship happens to pick him up. And then he's able to talk to his daughter right before she dies, and he spends his whole life trying to get back to her. And they walk in and they have a 2-minute conversation, and she shoos him away and he's fine with it. And then he goes off to try to find... None of it makes any sense at all, period. It's completely nonsensical story-wise.
Why do you hate a happy ending?
it's totally nonsensical. And And Bran, Dr. Bran, is set up as this great scientific character, this nice, strong, scientific female character, and then as soon as they get into space, all she gives shit about is going to see her boyfriend. Fuck humanity. I don't care about humanity. Fuck everybody else's dreams. All I want to do is bang my boyfriend. Who may or may not be alive on this planet, right? None of it makes any sense at all. It's completely... It's one of the worst scripts I've ever read. There's a moment in the middle of the movie where Anne Hathaway, who's probably going to win an Oscar someday if she hasn't already, I don't remember if she has.
She has.
Okay, so an Oscar-winning actress gives the worst monologue I have ever heard in my life about love. A scientist pontificating about the science of love and how it's beyond us, but it's a fifth dimension, and as the words are coming out of her mouth, I could almost feel her wanting to crush Christopher Nolan's skull. It was just awful. Just awful. It got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and the stakes got higher and higher and higher, and then they were all magically removed. However, the robots, which you didn't see at all in the marketing, except in one little blurb that I thought were going to be terrible, were awesome. I loved the robots. They were the best part of the whole movie by far, and it's not even close. I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. I'm taking down notes as we're... Mike, I might have to disagree with you on this one, and more agree with Amy on this one. I think, as all of Christopher Nolan's movies, you know, starting with Memento and, you know, the Dark Knight series, and, well, Dark Knight kind of had, like, its own mythos, but he kind of took it to this realistic spot. And then, I can't agree with you when you take a movie like Inception, and we're all on board for that one, and then go into this one and not accept a couple of things. I think my overall impression of the movie was it was very, very majestic through every single use. A green screen wasn't used once in the making of this movie, so I think a lot of imagery, I fear that...
It was boring!
It was not
boring. They were boring!
Supposed to... My impression is that
was more interesting than the Ice World with surprise the worst villain in the history. Why do you need a villain in the middle of your space epic? I'm sorry, go on. I thought that would be
done. You needed, of course, an antagonist.
Why?
So I don't know. Go watch Mockingjay. Why is an antagonist needed? You know, why is there a single point? You know, it's. I thought the movie was very much about isolation and then the questions that can come with isolation when it comes to those movies. I mean, those are some things that are actually being discussed today, you know, about, like, there are people who are being groomed and are trying to become candidates for a one-way mission to go see...
Let me ask you, we're just talking about the plot, because to me it's the plot. The writing of this was the worst script of a major motion picture.
I don't know about the worst script.
Huge picture that I can remember in years. So we all agree that the humans, the future humans, have orchestrated this whole thing, and then he goes into the weird fucking fifth dimension with the library, and he taps on the wall, and it figures everything out. I can accept all that. Why on earth did they stick the wormhole next to Saturn? Why didn't they stick it next to the moon that takes 3 days to get to?
The people?
Yes. The people who are saving... somebody puts this wormhole here to help. Why stick it somewhere that's further away than humanity had ever traveled? Why not stick it next to the moon, where we've been? And why are they sending 12 people through these wormholes when they could send 12 robots through the wormholes? Or 50 robots through the wormholes?
Because robots can't delineate. They have settings made, right? Isn't that okay? First of all,
in the movie, because the human or the robots are not able to go past the point of rationality, basically, you know, and like when he's trying to land the ship, I can't remember it's been a couple weeks, but like when he's trying to land it, and the robot's telling him basically this isn't going to work, and he's like, it's going to work. You just, you know, I can feel it.
Right. I gotta say, I'm happy that they didn't show the robots off Because I like a good surprise in the movie. I actually hate...
Oh, it's great. That was the best part of the movie.
Oh, yeah. And there are very, very skilled actors who did both of them. Both for Tars and what's the other one? Case? Is that what it is? The name of the second one? I forgot what the names were. But I don't know if we're supposed to know about the premise. I mean, I don't know about... I will admit the cheesiness of saying, like, what love is, you know,
Nobody had any cost. Just the premise. Okay, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to the beginning, okay? Matthew McConaughey is a super-duper fighter pilot who somehow is a disgruntled farmer, okay? His bookshelf tells him that NASA is within one day's driving distance away. They've got this mission that had to have been planned for decades in order to get it going. He shows up the day before they're leaving, and they're like, you know what? We didn't have a fucking pilot. We didn't know how we were going to send this thing out there. We didn't know what the fuck we were going to do. We've even got a uniform over here with Cooper on it. Isn't it perfect that you just showed up on time? They know how to get to Saturn and go through Saturn, but they didn't know that the pilot was 20 miles away and didn't want to farm anymore? And then he loves his kids so much that he decides to leave on a mission that has no, that he doesn't know anything about. He's been talked to for 5 minutes, and he's going to forever never see his family again. That's the most important thing to him. Convince me that it's not terrible.
But when you've got some, like, real anger issues
about
terrible.
The movie. It's awful.
But there's so many movies that are like, I mean, you have to, like, give them some of that. They're setting up the dramatic part. It wouldn't be dramatic. It would not reach the audience if it didn't have those dramatic points. There's so many movies like that.
It's fine. Why can't he? Why does he have to have been a farmer? Why couldn't he have always been working with NASA?
Well, didn't you get the premise, Mike, is that year by year, you know, terraforming the Earth was a necessity for survival, and basically that's why NASA was defunct.
Who was going to pilot the ship that had to stay back?
Well, they even say that. They're like...
This fucking guy's like, what? I've been doing this for 10 years. This guy doesn't even know the freaking electronic board. And I've got to stay now.
I thought this movie was overall, I think some characters like came and went, like I don't know where like Matt Damon's character kind of pumped out. I felt like a lot of like waiting around for certain events to happen.
Let me ask you this. We were in the theater by ourselves when we saw Interstellar. So mm-hmm. I have heard, were you by yourself when you saw it, or were other people in theater with you?
I had other people in there with me.
Did people laugh when the water pod that you sleep in forever opened up and revealed that it was Matt Damon? Was there audible laughs in your theater?
I heard a couple of snickering, maybe from like a couple people.
The infallible Christopher Nolan, do you think the intent of the director was for the audience to laugh at that moment?
No. Absolutely not.
He's a fucking superstar, and he's stuck in a pod, and nobody knew he was in the movie.
But I think that was intentional.
You were supposed to laugh.
No. I think it was intentional that they didn't market that he was in it.
But people laughed. I laughed. People laughed because they're like, what the fuck is Christmas? Why is Matt Damon in this movie?
Why does he have to be marketed up? He's a supporting actor in this film, Mike. Why would he have to be all hyped up about his role? That could be, you know... Are you saying like actors can't
like
be?
His role? Did you like him constantly talking all the way through his murderous rampage? The best part of that whole thing.
I was trying to find a lot. Well, again, that's. I agreed with a lot of this stuff because I fell on the premise that with tying in your relativity, when people go out to let's just say we did go out for 10 years, you know, and you were by yourself, you know. Who's to say that he didn't go a little cuckoo while he was out there, like, trying to, you know, through the many Earths and basically knowing, like, who's to say that he didn't? I would say that, like, the best of friends, you know, could get changed by a situation.
Okay.
By that. okay. Relativity. I mean, look at his fight.
I get the crazy. I'll give you the crazy, okay? We have the technological capability to fly people to Saturn, send them successfully through a wormhole, land on foreign planets, send messages back, but we can't diagnose that the entire fucking planet is made of ice and is not habitable from just outside of orbit. Everything in this movie is a plot of convenience. It makes a superhero movie look like the depths of Oscar-nominated, script writing. It's every single thing in this movie is absolutely on the nose for convenience. Everything.
Well, what else?
When he goes into the fucking black hole, the TARS survives. You never see TARS, but he can hear him.
Yeah.
How is he able to communicate with TARS?
But we don't know. That's the whole entire premise. Everyone always says that they've never been beyond the horizon.
Convenience. Everything is of convenience.
Well, Mike, how else are you going to fucking wrap up a plot within two hours, you know? Isn't it convenient?
It would be like in The Shawshank Redemption if after 20 years he finds a fucking key underneath his bed.
I mean, you know, isn't it convenient that, you know, what's this last movie that he did? Like, Inception, that they managed to, like, you know, get the kicks, like, just right and to extract the information. Isn't it just perfectly keen that we just quite don't know what happens at the very end, where what kind of reality that he's in, like, with his, what do they call those? The
spinner, the top.
Well, not, but I'm saying that I
like that. He did that. He didn't do that in this one. In this one, he doesn't go into the black hole, think he saves everybody, and then you never see anything else, and you have to deduce for yourself what happens. You see him floating in Saturn, then he's in the Elysium fucking world, where they built him a farm, even though he hates farms, and he gets to see his daughter before she dies, and all of her hundreds of, I don't know, how is she alive 180 years later, whatever, and...
He said that she was in cryostasis. Man, Mike,
Whatever. Yes. And then he gets to steal a ship and fly off to meet to go bang Anne Hathaway on some planet because her convenient boyfriend is dead now, so he can live all of his happy life.
But don't you see that was like even like that's the same thing with Matt Damon's character. Anne Hathaway as a scientist had to acknowledge her wantingness, you know, because it's all about, I think this movie is...
Right. And the woman is the one that
has to be. It's all about the answers that are, the questions that are answered in desperation.
She has to have a man help her. Without her daddy fucking pounding shit out on a library wall, she can't solve the problem.
Just know, Richie, we saw this 2 weeks ago, and I have never heard him say any of this stuff. Man, he's been holding it back.
I didn't know we were going to talk about.
I didn't know we had so much pent up anger.
What we're going to talk about?
I'm going to go ahead and say that in a movie that is supposed to have you asking questions and dissension, I think all the characters' motives were. Even Mike says that they're conveniently wrapped up. I think in order for those questions to be asked, you kind of have to have something concise because you can, you know, there's
And what about the fucking other doctor? The guy that's stuck on the ship for 23 fucking years. Nobody gives a shit about him. He's totally there for convenience. He doesn't go crazy. They show up and he's like, "Where the fuck have you been?" With his beard. And then they go to the next planet. He gets killed by Matt Damon in 5 seconds, and everybody's like, "That's a fucking shame. He doesn't get to live out his dream, but I'm still going to be able to have all the things I want at the end."
Well, yeah, man. It's about sacrifice, and that's what the fuck they were all doing for. Sacrifice anything. Oh, my goodness.
What about the son? The son does everything the dad wants him to do. He's a good kid. He tries to take care of his family. Nobody gives a fuck about the son. He's not even mentioned at the end. Did his family get taken off the planet, or are they still stuck down there farming in the dust?
Because he always knew, the impression that he always got was that everything was fine with his son. When they left, the son's like, "I'm going to go ahead and take care of them."
He's dying.
But I really think that based on the way the plot went, he didn't know he was going to... I think he had every intention of thought that he was going to be back, but
yes.
The he was the same age he was then, you know.
Yes, that's why they encountered like all these issues.
Years they missed, but you know, you still are there to watch them raise their kids and all that. And I mean, because as soon as they're not very far through the wormhole before he realizes how much time is going to have passed before he gets back, and he's devastated. But what is he going to do? There's nothing he can do about it at that point.
That's what happens when you decide to take an interstellar trip, when you go into the woods for 5 minutes and you meet your old professor. Instead of like thinking through, you know, this really, you know, major world-altering thing.
But I think his ultimate goal, yes, he left his family, but his ultimate goal was he was trying to save his family because, like you said, it's a dying planet. He could have stayed there and watched his children die, or he can go out and try to save them and the rest of the world.
And NASA was so concerned about his input that they didn't have any information that they had given to him, even though they were 5 minutes away. For 50 years while they were creating this plan, and one day before they rocket into the, you know, into interstellar space, he happens to show up and they think that he's a great addition. Doesn't make any sense. So
I don't think that there's this whole entire thing is about relativity, so we don't actually know that it was like the next day or like whatever. This could have been months down the road. I think this the whole entire point of the movie is that it plays with time, you know, and the questions that come with time, you know, like, you know,
I like that. I like, you know, when I saw the trailer and I saw the black hole, the first thing I thought was he's going to get sucked into an area near the black hole. It's going to accelerate him faster than they had planned, and he's gonna come back, and everybody's gonna be dead. That's what I had thought, and that would have been a much better movie.
No, it would not have.
What?
It would have been a much more realistic movie. Entertaining.
Richie, did you see it? See it in IMAX?
Yes.
We didn't see it in IMAX. Did you have problems with the sound?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Because there have been tons of reports that you couldn't hear lines of dialogue, and that there were issues with the soundtrack and the special effects being layered over top of the sound. And Nolan apparently did it on purpose, because he said at times that the imagery is more important than what the characters are saying, but it was really frustrating for apparently a lot of people. We didn't have the issue in our show, so it wasn't
I didn't have the issue, but I'm going to go ahead and give it. You know, I don't know if we give any rating systems out of what we're doing here, but I'm gonna go ahead and see it while it's still in theaters, because it is something to be seen from IMAX. Amy, closing arguments about it. Mike, closing arguments about it. Okay.
Do you still think it's your favorite movie of the year?
I don't know. Well,
because you did.
I did. When I walked out, it had spoken to me, and there were so many things between each of the characters, and you know, for all the convenience, and I do agree, there are a lot of things. It's almost like it was set up to so that you could have that happen. But I think that the reactions of the characters were very realistic and honest. You know, even Anne Hathaway, yes, she's a scientist. She's supposed to be, you know, thinking scientifically, but she's in love. And so sometimes we're blinded and we follow our heart instead of our head. And so while that makes her look like a weaker person, it also makes her human and makes her relatable to a situation that any of us could find ourselves in. Or like you said, Matt Damon, okay, he's been isolated for however many years on this planet by himself, and doesn't even now have his robot companion, which would at least give him dialogue and conversation and make you feel sane, you know. And so, I told Mike when we came, I was like physically furious. I wanted to rip through the screen and choke him. I was so mad at Matt Damon because his character was, in my mind, I was like, he's the evil villain. Now, Dr. Brandt, yes, was a bit villainous too because he lied all those years. But there again, I didn't feel like he was a villain. I felt like he was doing it for the right reasons, even if those reasons, you know, there was some flawed logic there. I felt like everybody's motives were good, and you know, so for me it was, I got sucked into like the human interest story basically. And I was able to kind of suspend disbelief in some of these other things that, yes, were probably, you know, now that they're kind of, you know, pointed out to me, but it didn't bother me because I was so drawn into the story. And I felt like there was, you know, stakes involved. And yes, not as many stakes from, you know, from McConaughey's character. Most of the people in his life survive, but there's still, you know, his grandson died from whatever the, you know, from the dust and all that, and, you know, so there was suffering that took place, and he still, while he got to see his daughter as an old lady, he still missed out on her entire childhood, basically, and her adult life, and, you know, so there's still loss there, even if it's not, you know, lost by our standard, you know, by other standards.
I think there's an incredible amount of sacrifice on our family. So here's an interesting question that we'll ask the three of us. If you were in Dr. Brand's spot, and you were one of the few people who were smart enough to go through the equations and not yet know that we could bend time or whatever, and gravity and all the good stuff that eventually, and I don't think we're meant to know how we ever got to that level where we could tell ourselves how to do it, right? Like, that's one of those, like, you know, a chicken egg scenario. Would you tell the human population that they are doomed, or would you just kind of let them live on to, like, free, you know, like, on their lives, and, you know, I don't know if they knew if there was a certain end game as far as, like, a certain date where we were all just going to die, but would you let people on the Earth know and possibly cause, like, riots and people knew that they were going to die and the chaos that might come with it, or would you kind of keep it to yourself and let things play out?
I don't know. It's a tough scenario, because in that situation comes up when, I can't even think of, when Cooper's daughter finds out that Brant had been lying and that it wasn't, that it was a failure and it wasn't going to work. She even said, because he says the Topher Grace's character, who, now that was kind of,
what the fuck is Topher Grace in the movie?
That I thought was a little silly. That was just, they were just looking for another.
Son of a, hey, okay, so, relatively speaking, no time has passed, no little error happened at all. To you who's listening to this, it's like no time has passed at all, but to us, hours and hours have gone by. In fact, one whole year. We are now a year older. Happy 2015, everyone, bitches. So, all right, well, what was the last question we were asking? Oh, yeah, would you, Mike, would you tell everyone, or would you just kind of let the Earth do, like, whatever?
Would I tell everyone? Yeah, I would. I think it's, you know, pretty incredible to believe that you would be the only one with the capacity to solve the problem. So by keeping the answer to yourself so that no one else can work on solving the problem in a different way, you're basically dooming everybody to your worst fear, which is pretty terrible. Now, there may not be anything that you could do anyway, but...
Right. That's the point. Would you say anything?
Well, yeah. No, I would definitely say something, because I would hope that maybe someone else would have an idea that would work.
Yeah, I would probably say something to, like, a certain... I would try to keep it as hush-hush as possible, not to incite, you know, chaos for the people who wouldn't care any other way. Are we still all right, Mike?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, cool. All right, guys. Well, that was a very spirited discussion about Interstellar. Can't wait for the next Christopher Nolan movie. Oh, my God. All right. The next one is going to be Disney Animation's movie Big Hero 6, which is, in ironic fashion, Pixar movies are actually going down while Disney Animation Studios are actually going up. Weird trend. Even though John Lasseter, who founded Pixar after he got booted out of Disney because, and we all noticed that trend about, I think it was after, you know, you had, in the early 90s, you had those great string of movies, right? You had, like, Oliver and Company, and then you went to Little Mermaid, then you went to Beauty and the Beast, and you went into Aladdin, and then Lion King, and then Pocahontas, and then somewhere after Pocahontas, it became more about, they said that John Lasseter said that non-creative people basically were in charge of Disney, so they had, like, a string of movies that just sucked butt, like, you know, Lost in Atlantis, what was that? What was that?
It sucked butt, you know.
Yeah, you like that? Yeah, you know, it's what I do, guys, so. And then, And then all of a sudden, like, the Pixar movies just started kicking really, really, like, crazy. What was it? How did they go? Toy Story, then Monsters, Inc., and then The Incredibles, and then the Cars.
Bugs Life was second.
Bugs Life was second. Okay, I'm sorry, I messed up. I missed, like, some movie in between. But then, you know, some Disney animation movies had come out, like Bolt. And I think they said Bolt was kind of like when the studio really, really started to, like, change. And then all of a sudden, Tangled came out. I think that was the first movie that, or the second movie that John Lasseter had. I think they oversaw Bolt, and then they started coming out with Tangled, which was great. And then they had, of course, Frozen, which I cannot deal with on any kind of like level. I cannot physically or psychologically deal with Frozen anymore. And then you have this latest release, which is going to be a big deal. So, what?
You want to build a snowman?
Yeah, I no. God, just let it go, Mike. So you have Big Hero 6, which is based on a Marvel property, though it won't be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is good because yeah. they kind of oversimplified the project a little bit. But I had the opportunity. I went up to St. Louis to visit Amy and Mike, and I'm pretty convinced it was our plan to do a podcast while I was up there. But you douches were too tired or something and had, like, kids to attend to and dogs to feed and stars to look at that we never got around to it. Frankly, I'm disappointed we didn't get to that because it would have been cool, but no, I was kidding, guys.
We had a week over your trip. We were exhausted. Yeah. Mike got sick.
I did get sick.
You guys got sick?
It's way more stimulation than we're used to in a three-day period.
It wasn't because of you.
No.
Here, but I got sick, yeah.
The kind of chaos I bring, but I thought, you know, that movie was great, and I'm going to go ahead and kick it off. I thought it was great family fun. I recommend anyone to go see this. I don't think it has anything, I think with the death of, I'll spoil it. I don't care. Spoilers. I think the motivation for why the team, like, comes together and why he kind of does this stuff is can speak. You know, you need that in a good Disney movie, right? You need some kind of powerful event to happen in a young person.
Right, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I thought it was fantastic. I love the characters. The humor was out of this world. I thought they showed space in a really, really good way, you know, as opposed to Mike Saturn. I thought it was really, really good. So, Mike, we'll start with you. What is your impressions of Big Hero 6?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a perfect mix of Disney animation and Marvel superhero stuff, frankly. I thought they nailed it on the head with all of the diverse cast and having girls in it that weren't simple, stupid girls that need to be saved. Each of the characters brought something to the table that I thought was fun and interesting. I heard on a different podcast somebody mentioned that they thought that the best stuff in the movie was when they weren't being superheroes, and I think that that's true. I think when they weren't in their super suits, you know, woman, where's my super suit? When they weren't in their super suits, it was great. When they were in their super suits, it was fine. It was fun. It was good. They had some stuff to do. The villain was really cool. The bots and the way they used the bots I thought was very different, which I thought was neat. You know, I mean, it was a little bit of an Iron Man origin story and an Avengers origin story kind of thing for kids. And, you know, there's lots of plot holes in it, like how a, you know, kid whose mom or aunt that raises them is a, you know, owns a bakery shop, is able to afford all the, you know, stuff to make his superhero guy. But, you know, it's a kid. So it's fine. And so because it's a kid's movie, it works fine. And you're not stuck in that in that stuff long enough to really make a difference. I thought all the various different characters were really fun in the way that they were used. You know, I liked the Go-Go's woman up, you know. And, you know, all of them were really interesting and really fun. And I thought it was cool that they didn't really know what to do at the beginning. And they got all their super suits. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. And so they basically got their ass handed to them. And, you know, I liked that. I thought it was cool. I thought the way that it ended was neat. I think it sets up for them expanding it into more. And, you know, I'm very excited to see a Big Hero 6 too.
I love how you say you don't understand how the mom can, But then the same company makes a talking snowman singing with princesses with ice. All right, whatever, Mike.
Frozen. If you want to get into Frozen, Interstellar is the best movie in the history of the world compared to Frozen.
God, all right. Amy, we were at the same time. What, Amy, what did you think of Big Hero 6?
I thought it was great. I thought it was a fun story. It had higher stakes than I expected for a Disney movie.
Yeah.
On more than one occasion. And I remember, I think it was Drew even said, did he just die? You know, because it was at the point where Hero's brother runs into the building to save the professor. And, you know, so the stakes were very high. But I think that they were able to, you know, it wasn't so high that, you know, you wouldn't want to take your child to see it. I thought it was great. I would kind of agree with Mike. I think my favorite scene, at least for myself, my favorite scenes in the movie were not when they were battling or, you know, going after the bad guy. I think probably my favorite sequence in the whole movie is when Hero's brother takes him to the school, definitely. And they go from station to station, and, you know, to watch, because that's really how you see when kids see science in action. That's how their eyes do light up, and I thought that was great to see all the different things that these, you know, teenagers basically are working on. And, you know, yeah, some of it's far-fetched, but there's stuff like that's going on in development and science every day, and most people have no idea, you know, what scientists are working on and some of the stuff that they come up with, and I just thought that was great. I thought the characters, each one of them was very interesting and funny in their own way. Even Fred, who's like the goofball, you know, he served a purpose, and he wasn't just the goofy sidekick that doesn't do anything.
He had the best suit of all of them. His suit was awesome. Yeah. I want his suit.
So it's fun, you know. The kids enjoyed it, and it, you know, adults are going to enjoy it too. We had a good time. So
yeah.
I imagine that probably the university maybe gave him funding, Mike, to pursue his project to get into the university. All right, I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there, okay, for that one. And I would also say,
if we're going to get into this, why is the professor, who's the bad guy, funding the people who are building his team to defeat him?
He didn't get to the he didn't fund them.
Okay.
I would say that Fred, at that point when they wanted to become superheroes, probably had a hand in funding. I mean, look where he...
It's fine. I would say that's possible.
What do you mean that's possible? All the testing was done at Fred's house, implying that he, you know, whatever, like, money that he had was used
to... They said it was a safe place to like, regroup, and he goes, I know just the place.
Oh, right,
and they
right,
go there,
yeah.
And the butler, you know.
Yeah, and all the testing that's afterwards, after a Hero designs the equipment, you know, it seems like it's done at his lab, and it's probably helped funded that way, by the way. And, you know, a big problem, and I don't know if this is an actual problem, so I was telling someone the other day that it's kind of like a double sword, right? So what we're going for, hopefully, as a society is equality, right? Whether it comes to, like, race or gender or whatever. So, but I find that they're still wanting to have people who you can find, like, that you can identify with people in the movies. Like, a perfect example is that show Selfie that I keep raving on about. It got canceled, but I loved how the two, like, main characters, one was Karen Gillan from the Guardians of the Galaxy. She played, like, Nebula. And then the main guy was John Chow, who, yeah, he's kind of known more for his Herald role, but he was the Henry Higgins character, and it didn't matter that he was Asian. It just mattered that he was a guy who had it together, which I really, really appreciated. Now, with this movie, I kind of am going back and forth because the comic itself is based, and all the characters are Asian. They're actually all Japanese, no matter what. And so as an Asian American or American Asian, I'm like, that was very identifying. What they did was that they stripped away the two main characters, because those first two main characters would have been too heavy for a Disney movie, for sure. And I don't care that they did that. But then they also kind of multicasted the role. Do you think that was... I'm wondering if that took away from the integrity of what the original property was supposed to be about, you know, for the sake of making it diverse, or whether they could have kept it all Asian characters. It's kind of like the same conversation when you have one. Was Jake Gyllenhaal, you know, why did he have to play the Prince of Persia, you know, in the movies and like whatnot, and how they always get, what's that one movie with the little kid who can control like the wind or something like that? What was that movie? You guys know what I'm talking about? The girl had to control ice. He's like a little martial artist. He had like a bald head, and the character is supposed to be Asian, but they get like white.
The Last Airbender.
Yeah, it's The Last Airbender. I don't know. Like, do you think it's more important for movies to go out of their way to make more people that you can identify with, or do you think they should kind of keep it to what the original, you know, intention of the character based on the people who wrote it?
You know, I think it depends on the movie. I would agree with you. I think on adult movies, I would like it to be, you know, based more in reality and not so, you know, multicultural. I think for kids, you know, a children's movie especially, you know, children tend to enjoy things better when they can identify with somebody. And so I think by having a multi, you know, faceted group, there's going to be somebody in that cast that they can identify with and that reminds them of themselves or their brother or their sister or their, you know, their best friend. So I think for a kids movie, it doesn't bother me as much. It makes it more relatable. But, I there are movies where it's like, why did they cast the person they cast? You know, they were just going for star power or, you know, whatever it is. And sometimes I think that takes away from the movie itself. It's more as a distraction than anything, but it doesn't bother me in a kid's movie.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think?
I mean, I think you have to be realistic about what the movie business is, and it's a business. And San Francisco is a mashup of America and Asia. And the two biggest, you know, film markets by far are the United States and China. And Japan's very big also. And, you know, there's a lot of developing markets out there. And so Europe is an American proxy. So the vast majority of movie theater dollars are going to be spent by people in Asia or Europe and America. And they even had some Latino, Hispanic characters. And I think that's good. I think, you know, I think it's fine for the Fast and the Furious, for all of its faults and storytelling. I think one of the reasons it's really successful is there's someone to identify with for just about everyone who goes into those movies. They have black actors, they have Latino actors, they have white actors, they have Asian actors, they have women that are strong, they have men that are weak, they have men that are strong and women that are weak, and they have tech people, and, you know, there's a mix of everything. And in this, it's very similar. You know, Fred's a white guy, Hero's obviously supposed to be Asian, and I think Go-Go, I think, was Asian too. What's Honey, whatever, Honey yeah. Lemon, I know was played by a Hispanic girl.
Right.
Girl.
Genesis and, Rodriguez.
Yeah, and Wasabi, even though it's a you know, Japanese word, is a black guy. I don't know I assume that the character that voiced him was a black actor.
Yeah, it was actually Damon Wayans Jr. That's Damon Wayans.
Right, right. And he was great. He was so funny.
I see the Wasabi in my shirt. One time, everyone. One time.
And you know, and I think the team worked together nicely. And I think we live in a melting pot country, and you know, I think we're still some of that. But I don't have any problem with it at all. My kids didn't come out and go, oh, there was a black guy, you know, with the giant laser, the cool laser things. They were talking about the movie and how they liked it. And I think the more positive experiences you can have with kids and showing them that the people that look different than them aren't to be feared, I think that's better. Because I think, you know, there's a lot of racism and other stuff, and I don't need to go into that in this kind of a podcast, but a lot of it is based on not understanding the other side and not being familiar enough with it. So, but also I think it's a business decision. You make San Francisco and Tokyo look like San Francisco and Tokyo put together, and kids in Asia are going to look at that, and they're going to be more interested in going to see the movie. There was a scene that was specially filmed in Iron Man 3 in China, specifically for the Chinese audience, and it was I think filmed in Chinese, I believe, so that they could get access to that market. And Iron Man 3 was the biggest movie of the year last year, I think, or Frozen maybe you just barely eclipsed it.
Actually, you want to know what's sad? In that the highest rated movie was Transformers: Age of Extinction, because a dominant portion of that movie and marketing is towards China, and that's why it's number one, which is, I get that it's a, but man, I go, I just think it's, I don't know, I don't like the idea that that's how you have to play up to a market is to feature up, you know, their, I mean, I understand.
You know, that's easy for, you know, you're obviously a minority, Amy's a woman, it's easy for me to say, well, we don't need a woman president, we don't need a minority president, because why can't we just have white guys if they're good? You know, you're American, we're all American. It's easy for us to say you don't have to have Asia in the movie to make it relevant. Those people are happy. They obviously, Transformers was terrible.
Terrible.
And it was not the biggest movie of the year in the United States by a long shot. It wasn't even number two or number three. But it's by far the biggest movie in the world because it featured world stages. And the new Avengers, it mostly takes place in Europe and Africa and Asia, I think. And I think that there's a reason for that, because there is a business side to this, and America isn't the only destination anymore. These movies cost so much to make that you can have it be okay in America and not even do very well in America, but if it does well enough overseas, you'll get sequels. And there are a lot of movies that are out now that have sequels that you see that. Transformers is one of them.
Well, didn't they greenlight? What was the Pacific Rim?
Yeah, Pacific
Same
Rim
type
is
of
getting.
Thing.
Pacific
they
Rim did not do well here.
The sequel because of the Asian market.
Yeah.
Was so strong.
It just sucks that, you know, if you.
Which was a movie that was not very
right.
good.
Right. What because it's I think those are examples of when you just want to put on a movie for the hopeful. You know, you're not really caring about story or plot or whatever. You just want to make money.
Well, an example that has used this as an advantage for basically its entire franchise is James Bond. Mm-hmm. The Bond franchise has been a world-traveling franchise forever, and it's been around for 50 years. And there's lots of reasons why it's been around for 50 years, but I think one of those reasons is that it has tapped into foreign markets from the beginning. And so it's able to have a maybe mediocre movie do a little better than it should, and so it softens the blow when you have, like Marvel has made a ton of really good movies, Thor the Dark World wasn't great, but it's softened because the rest of the brand has done well because people give it the benefit of the doubt, but Marvel's going to have bad movies, so if it's able to have something work on, you know, in foreign markets where, you know, they might not be as discerning on story for a number of reasons because they want to see something that happens in their neck of the woods, and they're willing to overlook it. Well, that's a way for them to make money.
It's, yeah. I mean, you know, watching that movie, you know, a big thing that and this will also tie into Interstellar, like, a little bit. I love the use of music. Interstellar was, like, you know, a lot of emphasis on organ, you know, for, like, majestic. This one incorporated a lot of, like, you don't get a lot of in soundtracks of a guitar, like doing like the actual like narrative within a score, you know. So it was like very very modern. I thought the look of each character was great. I was really debated for like a little while about like, you know, the original, because Marvel is, you know, sometimes I don't like people to kind of, it's like we'll talk about it probably in the future, but like, you know, does it matter that on The Flash that the girl is African-American who is supposed to be traditionally like a girl with like, you know, Caucasian girl with red hair, right? In The Flash, right? Wait, what? What are you saying?
Are you talking about his stepsister?
First of all, I don't think he... Okay, wait a second. This is a little tangent over here. I saw your post earlier. I think he's his guardian. He never adopted him.
But it happened when he was like 10, right?
All right, hey, whatever, man. She's cute.
He totally wants to bang the girl that he's grown up with as his sister.
It's not his sister. No, friend.
Here's my argument, because we had this discussion, and I was
creepy.
Like,
oh, it's creepy.
It's not creepy.
It's like
you're creepy.
No, he's like her. It's like falling in love with your best friend from childhood, or your best friend's brother.
I don't know.
You're around him every day because you're there, but...
I like the show, and I'm obviously wrong because you guys echo what other people have said. I'm willing to be wrong. I'm happy to be wrong. It just gives me... It makes me creepy. It's creepy to me, you know? Yeah. I mean, I'm divorced. My kids... I mean, you know, Amy doesn't have any kids, and, you know, the
my kid's mom is not with someone right now that has other kids, but it would be weird. My daughter is 8. You know, if in 2 years, you know, she was, you know, she married some guy that had 2 kids, it would be weird for Morgan to then, like, you know, hook up with the step kid. That's weird. That's not weird.
But that's different when they're raised as siblings. Then, like, this is somebody that they took in. His dad was still alive.
But he was in jail.
Well, but that doesn't mean that. But he went and visited him, and that it's not like. I think it's a little bit different scenario. Yes, they lived together and they, you know, interacted, but I don't see it as a brotherly sister. But maybe she sees it that way, you know, and that's why she's not into him. I don't know, but.
Okay.
We're going to title this episode, Mike Clearly Wrong and Insane.
We'll touch on this subject a little bit, but my point was bringing that up, you know, is that are you intentionally casting, you know, multiracial for the sake of putting it in there just because? Like, I remember there was talk of making Captain America, Will Smith was supposed to be Captain America, and Beyonce was supposed to be Wonder Woman, and I would have been upset if those characters, first of all, I think Beyonce is a terrible actress, you know, but I'm not saying that you can't. The new Fantastic Four, Mike and I will probably have an issue with this, because I don't like what they're doing, like, with the new one, but Johnny Storm's supposed to be black now or something like that, like, just, like, because, and I don't know what that's adding to the story, you know, other than changing the form. Like, I don't know why they're...
In the case of Fantastic Four, I think we don't have enough information to know.
Exactly.
If it serves the point of the story, it's fine, you know? I mean...
But that's what I'm saying. I go, we'll see, like, in a little bit, you know? Like, it's, you know, it's funny because... you know, there's always an uproar from each one of the different communities when a minority character is played by a white person. So there's like a group of...
Wait, I love Exodus then.
What's up?
Basically, all of the slaves are cast as black people Arabs, black people and Arabs actually, from what I've seen in the preview. Right. All the characters are white Europeans.
Yeah, so we'll see, like, how something like these movies, you know, they come out. You're right, I think I'll have to agree with Amy on that one, that, you know, it is kids' movies, and you know, no one talks about, as long as, like, no one's not saying, just like that show, Selfie, you know, as long as no one's not, is acknowledging, like, the race factor, I think, in some of these ones. I was just, for me, maybe it's just because maybe it's hard for certain people to, I think, identify with, like, certain characters. Kind of like, that's, sometimes, like, it's like, oh, that's my character, you know, I wanna, of my people, or if it's, like, having, like, if you were to take a woman character and have her play completely changed it up by a man, you know, without changing up the dynamics of it, so.
I think if the core of the character is in the identity.
Yeah.
Different. For instance, Black Panther, Chadwick Boseman, who was in 42, and he was great in 42 last year. He's been in some other things, was cast as Black Panther. He's obviously an African-American black actor. Black Panther is from an African nation. It would be very weird for them to make black. Oh, yeah. Most of his identity is in being black. So having him be cast as any other race would be unless there was some specific reason, it'd be hard to come through. In the case of The Flash, the reason that his sister is... his girl that he grew up with is there is because his dad, it was his partner or his friend or his neighbor or something.
Yeah.
So the fact that they were neighbors or friends or whatever has nothing to do with race. The guy was, the one guy's white, the other guy is black, but they can certainly be friends. I mean, you're Asian and I'm white and we're friends.
I still don't know why we're friends.
But you understand. So the fact that there's nothing that prevented that from being cast differently, and there's nothing that it serves any purpose. So that in that case, I don't think it makes much of a difference.
Right.
You know, now if they make the show about it being an interracial relationship at some point, then that's probably silly.
Right.
Just at this point, it's been about her being, you know, she seems like a really fun, you know, full of life kind of character, and that's how they're portraying her. I don't know the comics. So.
Yeah. I just noticed that, you know, like, and even like Disney's choice, you know, like a lot of the major, Marvel has them, a lot of the major Asian characters are not, I don't think I'm going to be featured in any kind of capacity. I think there was one maybe featured in one of the X-Men movies. I forget what one of, but even Big Hero 6, we took away two of like the main well-known like Asian, you know, characters. So we'll see how that grows out.
I thought Hero was Asian.
Yeah, I think he was.
He is Asian. He is of Asian descent, but as a major character, for the Big Hero 6 comic, he's not like the head of the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, you understand why Disney went with it, which is why it's not going to be, so I think it's going to be really good. So, all right, guys, let's get to the big one, and Amy, let's just go ahead and have you do it right off the bat, because you are the guru of Katniss, all right? Can you do one of these, like, right, like one of those like little things or whatever? Talk to me about Mockingjay and like whatnot, right? Talk to me about Mockingjay. Go for it. Where did you think that this movie ties in? Do you think it was justified to make Mockingjay two parts since Harry Potter did it and all these other movies are doing it? I guess it's time for someone else. Is it justified to do it into two? Why didn't it do it with the previous ones? Overall impressions of the movies, do you think it left us with enough and you think it's going to be a nice conclusion a year from now? Go for it.
Hold on. Before she says that, you saw the first movie, correct?
Yeah.
And you did not see the second movie.
I saw bits and pieces of it, like whatnot. That's, you know, everyone's like always telling me to go like read the books and I'm just not in. I'll get to my part in a little bit, but I'm not as
important. So you haven't seen all. So you went into this movie kind of not knowing everything that's happened.
I wanted to be that voice. I wanted to be like Amy. When Amy, didn't you tell me that you went? Which movie franchise did you walk into not really knowing?
That happens a lot to me because I don't, especially comic book stuff, because I don't. Yeah. I go into comic books, but even like, and Mike and I were talking about this the other day. I like surprises in movies. I don't want to be spoiled when I go in. I don't want to know, like, you know, all the plot points. And that's why trailers, for the most part, I'm not a huge fan of trailers. As much as I like movies and I like trailers because they're fun, they give away way too much. Yeah. And then there's no surprises. And, you know, but Interstellar, again, had a lot of surprises. There was a lot of stuff that was not in the trailers.
Like the fact that there was no story.
Right. You know, so surprises are good. I like to be surprised in a movie. I don't want to know what's going to happen. So, unless it's, you know, with something like this where I've read the books, you know, I knew what was going to happen. I thought they did a good job. It doesn't, you know, I don't know. Because we were talking about this the other day about how many people are upset about them breaking the third book into two movies. I get it from a business standpoint. It does not bother me personally. I was interested to see how they were going to be able to do it because I didn't remember there being really any point in the book where it would have made sense to just stop midstream. I thought they did a good job of where they ended it, the first part. I thought it was actually a pretty good place to stop. I was telling Mike because when we went, I have read all three books, but it's been about 2 years since I read them. I read them all, 1, 2, 3, and then I saw the first movie. So it's been 2 years, and I had started rereading the Mockingjay, I don't know, a couple months ago when we were headed to Seattle, but I didn't finish it. And so there was stuff that I had forgotten about. I will also say that Mockingjay was my least favorite of the books. I thought it was the weakest story. But I also thought it would translate to the big screen the best just because of how much action is in the book. But I thought they did a good job. I thought it was enjoyable. There was a lot of response from the theater we were in. It was not an IMAX, but it was what they called mega screen. So it's, there were, 500 people, and there were probably a half dozen empty seats, and they were single seats in the very bottom. So it was a packed house, and, you know, the reactions that we got, everybody seemed to enjoy it. You know, there was applause at the end, and, you know, I thought it moved along. It was a little bit slower than the others have been, but I also think because they're trying to set up for the big reveal on the part two. So overall, I thought it was good. Not great, but good. Enjoyable. So. And it's pretty true to the story. I don't think they changed, you know, I was telling Mike some of the few little things that I remembered that they changed. I'm not really sure why they changed them because I don't think it added to the movie, but it also didn't take away because they changed it. So
as a I'm actually kind of happy that I didn't really put all that emphasis on having to go see Catching Fire, because it is kind of, you know, it is, right? There's always, like, when it comes to movies that have, you know, such a strong backing, it is like walking into a Marvel movie, how much you know about the character ahead of time. So it was actually kind of refreshing, actually, to go, because I don't go to nearly the same amount of movies that Mike goes to. So my frequency is kind of like, if it's Marvel, I'm going to go see it in the theaters, and I've probably seen more movies this year than I ever did last year or like the year before that, only because I didn't really have like a desire to see any other franchises. You know, I just had like a little apathy about it. But, you know, going into this movie, it felt a lot like watching like the Harry Potter movies, like the having part one, part two, extremely... for a movie this far in, it is kind of cool to actually have that exposition. They actually did a pretty good amount, like, you know, filling you in for... I had, obviously, some kind of, you know, spoilers. Obviously, there was some kind of, like, devastation that happened in the previous movie, how are they recovering it. I have an idea, skipping from some point, that she's obviously, like, in a place now that she has to be, not where she wants to be, and... You know, she's still concerned about her family, and the use of propaganda as a tool in this movie is like, I mean, it felt so political as a movie to me, you know, reflecting, you know, how it's used like in the world today, you know, having to use like a symbol or something, and so I had like, it had like these really, really deep political overtones, and it wasn't, I actually kind of did like one of these. Up until it was the moment where they were visiting the hospital in District 8, if I'm not mistaken, for a quote-unquote real world, you know, instead of doing, like, the rebellion video that I did before. And that's where the movie started to pick up a little bit for me, you know. I felt the first hour of the movie, and then the second hour, I was like, oh, it's over? Is that where we're at? I was super, super surprised at the intensity of the scene when PETA, is that his name?
Yeah.
PETA Bread makes its way back and kind of goes at her. That was a pretty raw moment, like, in the movie, and I wasn't expecting that.
I forgot about that.
Well, I was just like, holy crap, and I'm coming from the first movie, you know, like obviously, like, something might have happened, like, in between, so, like, where's that? So, you know, am I anxious to see, like, the second one? And in a way, I kind of want to go watch Catching Fire now to see what the hell exactly happened, like, in the second one. It was hard to take in the stakes of, you know, a lot of, like, what this movie is. I think had I gone, like, had watched the movies, been a little bit more invested, I probably would have been a little bit better, but I was still kind of iffy. If I were to give this, like, if they had, like, a rating of, like, right, 0 to 5, I'd probably give this movie probably, like, maybe, like, 3.5 for me, you know? It wasn't, like, anything, like... It was great for, like, what it was, but I just don't think I'm as invested. Mike, what did you think?
Well, I wrote a review for it, like, and I did for Interstellar. I gave Interstellar 2.5 stars, so you'd be really interested to see when I give a movie a 1 star, how... angry I am. I gave this a 3.5 also. I think your points are pretty well taken. I have not read the books. I have seen the other movies, and I saw the other movies in the theater. A lot of people felt the first movie was not super well done. They actually replaced the director from the first movie with Francis Lawrence, who did Catching Fire and did both of the next two. And I think he did a pretty good job of kind of amplifying what was good about the first movie into the second one. I'd be very interested to see what you really think of the second one if you sit down and see it, because I actually really enjoyed the second one more. I think the second one is the best of the three films so far, but the best of the franchise to me so far still is the first movie for the last hour when you go into the Hunger Games themselves and you're like a cameraman at Katniss's side, and you're terrified for an hour of what's going to happen, because you know everybody's going to die, you don't know how it's going to happen, you don't know what's going to happen. You assume she's probably going to be the one that survives, but you never really know. It's brilliantly done. The scene with Rue in the first movie is
heart-wrenching and gives heart and soul to the movie in a way that's unusual. And I should say, I don't like the world. I've never cared for the world. I think the world, I don't like it's harsh. I don't think it's as good as the rest of the film and the rest of the story. The world building is weakish. Whereas I think in The Matrix, the world building was some of the best stuff. In this movie, it's the first part of a story. It's like the Two Towers in The Lord of the Rings or the last Hobbit movie. There's nowhere to stop. It's not the end. So that's a problem. However, there's some stuff in here that I think was really great. The District 8 hospital scene that you referenced, I thought was really very powerful. I think Jennifer Lawrence, and I said this in my review, is a really spectacular actress. And without her, this entire franchise would never have worked. I don't care for the fact that they continue to follow her around with the story so much, but because she's so good, it's okay. And you really see how it shines through in the District 8 scene. She's so good and can communicate so much without saying anything, and she does it very well in that scene, where she goes from anxious and not knowing what to do to horror at what she's seeing with all the people, to sadness and despair at all the suffering, and then to rising to the occasion when she realizes that they do need her as a leader. It's just spectacular. But for me, the best moment in the whole movie is musical, and you're a big musical guy. When she sings the part from The Hanging Tree, and then it goes into the montage, which leads into sort of a small action sequence. There's not a lot of action in this movie, but there's a small action sequence that's tied to this with water. The imagery of them up against the cliff with the water at the beginning and the way that the song is used is, I think, the second most effective use of a song I can ever remember in any movie I've ever seen. For me, the best use was Pippin's song in the middle of The Return of the King when he's singing for Denethor in the hall, and Faramir is charging into Ascyliath, and it's a suicide mission, and it's awful. It's just sad and somber and wonderful, and it's beautiful. And this is very, very close to that in terms of how the stakes and the tone of the song and the way it's sung, and it just matches everything beautifully. And that, for me, that was the best part of the film. It sort of trailed off there, and they had to clear some things up. The stuff at the end with her and President Snow sort of talking via teleconference, I thought was really good. I thought it worked really well. Again, it was a great moment for her to show her range as an actor, and Donald Sutherland, frankly, with his sort of cat and mouse and chess game that he's playing, I thought it was really good. I don't understand what happened at the end and why the president of the bad group allows the things to happen he allows to happen. I don't understand as an audience member. It leaves me open, and it makes me want to see the next movie, which I think is part of the deal probably. So, but I thought it was good. It's 3.5. I think it's worth seeing it. What I said in my review was if you like it, if you liked the first two movies, you're probably going to like this. If you didn't like the first two movies, there's probably nothing in here that's going to make you like it. That you didn't get enough.
Amy, is there enough in this movie, like, did it, where it stopped at, you knowing, like, where the rest of the franchise, or where the rest of the book goes, was it a good place to stop?
I think so. No. Because that's always the thing with this type of thing. Like you said, with Harry Potter, and now with The Hobbit, and now this, you know, if they do it well, I think it's fine to make it into two parts. It's how they stop it and how they bridge it then into the second one. And I think they did it at a good place. And after because like I said, it was fun. It was interesting because I was watching the movie, there were so many things that caught me off guard. I was like, what? And then I was like, oh yeah, I remember this now. And you know, those connections started to. So I now remember, even though I forgot a lot of the plot going into the movie, I know what's going to happen now, and I remember, and I think the second part is going to be, if they do it well, and so far, you know, he's done a good job, I think, of directing, and the writing's been, you know, pretty on spot. I think it's going to be great, so I think it'll be worth it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm maybe just forgetting it, because I just saw it, like, literally, like, you know, a couple of hours ago, but I don't know if they reference it in the very end, like what their plan is now. Like, what are they, you know, what are they gonna, you know? I wish they kind of at least give a little bit to the audience, you know, because it's one thing if you don't know, but, you know, for me, I didn't really know. I just don't know where they go from here. I'm so confused as to...
It really ended with basically this scene from The Matrix where Morpheus is in Zion, and he said, "We are still here," right? You know, and that rousing sort of get the troops going, and then it's just sort of like, I don't remember what the last moment of the last scene is. Oh, I remember now.
Where he's
in the bed. But it's not quite as cliffhanger-ish as Smaug literally flying to Lake Town. Which, you know, spoiler alert for you people that have not seen The Hobbit, the new Hobbit coming up, you know, things do not go so well for people in Lake Town. this is not that bad a cliffhanger, you know, but it's pretty cliffhangery, which makes sense.
I just want to get a little bit more idea where all the rest of the characters, what their stakes are. Like, I still don't know, like, what's going on with... Ooh, hello. I don't know where Gale is. Is that Liam Hemsworth character? Like, I'm trying to figure out what his function is. Like, I guess they're like...
He's a love interest.
Yeah, a best friend, but I thought that she loves PETA. I don't know. I'm just confused about, like, everything. Yeah,
it's a YA novel that is mostly been purchased by young girls, and it's got the same Twilight, love trope, you know, love triangle deal where the girl's got to decide between the two guys. I mean, I think that's a big part of the books, isn't it?
Is that what it is?
Yeah, because she loves them both, but neither one does she love in the way that they need or deserve to be loved by her. And ultimately, she will make a choice. They do have, there is conclusion to that in the final book.
I feel like they did a really good job of balancing in a way that Twilight lost me. Very early, I didn't see any of the movies after the first one because it was so on the nose.
Right.
This, I think, has plenty for people who aren't interested in the you know, sort of played out young teen romance, boy who's who to love kind of thing. But there's enough of it in there that the girls who are going to the movie for that purpose are going to have plenty to see. There's one I told Amy when we came out, my favorite moment. Single moment in the movie is when she sits at the edge of this ruin on this babbling brook, and the use of water in this movie is very interesting. Sitting next to what's his name?
Gale,
and she puts her head on his shoulder, and it's almost like this moment that they were always meant to have, this life that they could have together, but they can't because it's not the world that they're living in. And it was a really nice moment. It was really well done by the director. And
I thought that was really interesting. And it's funny, Mike, that you mentioned the use of water is dominant in. You know, I always feel like the water is a precursor to something like a game changer. Like from the use of water when they kind of destroy the dam, to the water when it comes down through District 13. To that scene where like the water is very calm. I don't know if people notice it. After they bomb District 13, when they come back up and all the white roses are, there's little bits of water trickling off like to the left and the right side of the screen. Like it's like a subconscious thing or like whatever. But yeah, I want to know where she's kind of going with that. So fantastic movie. I think everyone should go ahead and see that. So all right, guys. I kind of started making a list of movies that we should probably be expecting to go see before the end of the year. And just give me some, like, nay and yays if you're on any kind of, like, level about this.
All right.
Are you going to go see Penguins of Madagascar? With a kid?
I feel like I need to eat a Cheeto before I answer your question based on the preview. I am not super excited about that movie. I will see what there is out. Before the end of the year for kids, because I will take the kids to see something. I'm definitely going to take the kids to see Annie.
Yeah.
We'll definitely take the kids to see Annie. You need cheese all over your face, everywhere.
Like, all over, right? Here's an interesting one. How about, and this was a trailer in when I went to go see Mockingjay Tonight, A Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb.
Yeah, I might take the kids to see that.
That'd be a fun one.
And especially having, you know, it was kind of weird to see a preview of that movie because of course, Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that Philip Seymour Hoffman was in the Hunger Games at all.
Yeah, he's the game runner in the second movie.
Yeah. He'll be in the second part two also. He had almost completely finished filming his scenes for part two when he died.
I wonder how they're going to handle that. You know, it's very interesting.
They said they're not going to make a CGI version.
They rewrote. That's one of the things that I'm sure there will be controversy because the people who are diehard, you have to stay to the book. The writer director has already said, you know, you may not be happy with the direction that we went. However, we wanted to honor his memory, and by doing a CGI or, you know, somebody standing it, that just wasn't the way to do that. So I'm not sure how they're going to do that because he's very pivotal throughout the whole book and, you know, kind of in the middle of it. But you know, I have a lot of faith in them that they'll figure it out, and I think people, ultimately it'll be fine.
It's a tough deal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, some actors don't get to finish their, you know, their principal scenes, you know, and get a chance to go back and do...
Paul Walker with the new Fast and Furious, he was about, I think, halfway there.
Yeah,
his brothers, his real-life brothers actually came in to fill in for certain parts of his that hadn't been filmed, and there's going to be a little bit use of CGI, and they were actually talking about continuing on the franchise with him, with the two brothers, kind of introducing them maybe as, like, the brothers of Paul Walker's character, which would be 90s, so.
Yeah,
there's another movie, Into the Woods. Do you guys have any desire to see that one at all?
I am interested in that. I don't know if you remember our TV discussion when we were talking about Hulu. One of my favorite things that I've seen on Hulu is from British TV. It's a short series, 6 episodes, called The Wrong Hands. And James Corrigan is one of the main characters in that, and he is the lead in Into the Woods, one of the leads. So,
I think it's going to be great. And then I think that's it, right? There's nothing else major coming out this this December, right? Especially not a movie about 13.
You 4. Shall not pass!
Thank God. All right, Mike. Let's set up everyone. When does Hobbit come out?
Well, for Mere Mortals, The Hobbit comes out on December 17th. For me.
December 17th. What's the title of it? The Hobbit what?
Battle of the Five Armies. The Battle of the Five Armies.
Have you read the article that Billy Boyd, his presence in this movie?
He is doing a song, and I am excited to hear the song. And I have not; it's out. You can get it, but I don't. I want to be surprised when I go into the movie.
Exactly.
I've read The Hobbit probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 times. I read most of it to my kids in the last year.
Yeah. I wish that they didn't release these kinds of things out ahead of time because
I'm not going to hear. So they're having a marathon on Monday.
Are you going to do that?
And IMAX, and we are both going because she's a crazy person and has decided to subject herself to 9 straight hours of Hobbit and me.
I'm hoping for a bathroom break between the movies. I've never been to a
well.
A
the
movie
good thing
marathon.
Is we've seen. The,
oh yeah.
I mean, I own the extended editions of all the Lord of all the Middle Earth stuff,
yeah.
So I mean, we watch them all the time. And so, I mean, we can leave in the middle of those and
go
back. I'm sure, but
are they going to show me the going on the books?
Uh huh.
Are they going to show them, like, are they going to watch the first 2 Hobbit movies first? Is that what they're going to do?
Yeah, it's a marathon. They're doing the Unexpected Journey, and then the Desolation of Smaug, and then the premiere, basically, of Battle of Five Armies. And it's interesting, you were talking about the Hunger Games with the books. So in the book, where we are at is not very far from the end. It's, you know, we are probably 80-85% of the way through the book.
In the Hobbit?
Yeah, so, and the first probably 45 minutes of the first movie in this series aren't in the books at all. They're part of appendices and other things that were added in after he had written The Lord of the Rings and other things. So, but yeah, The Hobbit is, I mean, I love The Hobbit. It's one of my favorite books, and I am not objective. I will try when I do my review to be slightly objective, but I'm going to love it no matter what it is.
You know, they tried to do a similar thing with the Avengers movie where they showed all, like, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man 1 and 2 before they did it. I don't, you know, you should do like a Star Wars.
They had one for the Hunger Games, but it was on Thursday, and I had the kids here on Thursday, so we couldn't go.
Yeah.
Someone said that they were gonna try to do a similar thing for the Star Wars for the 7th movie, that they were gonna show all 6 of the original movies in order.
Jeez.
And segue into like the 7th movie. What's up?
That's 14 hours.
I know. And it's Star Wars, and there are crazy.
I'll do it.
He would totally do it, if it was Lord of the Rings or Hobbit segueing into Lord of the Rings, which that's just as many hours.
No, I would not. I wouldn't be able. It's the 25th. It's like the entire extended edition Lord of the Rings.
Are they going to be
just
showing
under
the extended edition?
It's just under 11 hours, I think. Like the final Lord of the Rings movie had a 3.5 hour running time in the theaters. There's very little that they added in the extended edition.
Oh.
Right.
I expect that he'll add a bunch in the extended edition here for fans.
Yeah. Because
that's what he did. The Desolation of Smaug. He pulled out a lot of the sort of Easter egg-y tidbit stuff, and like a lot of the Beorn stuff isn't in there. I actually live tweeted when I was watching it all the extended edition stuff that I was so excited for. But I love it. I'm excited for it. It's it's my favorite thing. But. It is not perfect, and I recognize that it's not perfect. I recognize that people were angry that the barrel scene had Bomber bouncing around on a thing. So, you know, that's kind of crazy. So I'm very excited to see it. My suspicion is that the 2014, based on the business that The Hunger Games has done this weekend, it's actually down quite a bit.
It's down. You saw that, right?
It's down almost 20% from Catching Fire, but it will make less money, and I assume that the second part will also not be as big as it would have been had it been one movie. But together, it will make much more than one movie would have made. It's going to be the biggest movie domestically of the year. The Hunger Games is going to be. It did $125 million. The previous opening weekend winner was Transformers, which was just over $100 million. None of the other movies made over $100 million. By far the biggest movie of the year so far is Guardians of the Galaxy. Nothing else is over $250 million, and it's at about $330 million right now. This will probably finish, based on the reaction of the fans and everything, it will probably finish somewhere between $350 million and $400 million. So it's going to probably beat Guardians. But not until the new year, but it'll still be the biggest movie of the year. So it's a big, you want to see the biggest movie of the year, that's it. The Hobbit will not, I'd be very surprised if The Hobbit outdoes this. It's a long movie. They are not as beloved as the Lord of the Rings movies generally. They are not as well reviewed as the Lord of the Rings movies generally. So I would expect that it will do very well, but not like this is doing.
Yeah.
And The Hunger Games is done well internationally too. I don't know if you may have even said that.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm pretty excited about to see all of these. A couple last minute things out there. A new teaser trailer has showed up for Jurassic World, which has a lot of throwback to the original Jurassic Park movies. So we're kind of excited because I think.
Speaking of that, because as I said, I don't look at this type of stuff. I don't read into it because I don't want to know as much. I didn't know that Chris Pratt was going to be in that, though.
I did.
I'm excited now.
I did. Yeah, pretty exciting that, yeah, you want to know where he's going to go at it. And I love when he comes out in I don't know if it's a denim shirt, but that's such a throwback to Dr. Grant's character by Sam O'Neill, I think, in the first Jurassic Park movie. So I'm glad that they're doing a lot of...
I think he's playing a park ranger.
Right. I just want to see, where they're going to go with it. So it seems like pretty exciting. So just want to say a big thank you again to everyone for listening to this. Catch us on the Exit the Donut Facebook page. We're really, really blowing it up on that one. We've also got our, on WordPress.com, we've got Exit Donut, where you can see all of our reviews. Mike will be coming out with some. I'll be putting one out there for Interstellar and Big Hero 6. We've also got a nice little Twitter handler. Did I just really do that? Handle. So come check us out. You know, we're trying to always put that great stuff there, but just want to thank each and every one of you for listening. Please subscribe to us, leave any comments if you guys have any questions about the movies, and we will see you guys probably at the end of the year. We'll probably try and get one more in here before the year is over, and then we got all the movies. What's up?
Hobbit movie.
So everyone, thanks a lot. Have yourselves a wonderful night, and we will see you soon. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.
You can contact us on Twitter at @ExitTheDonut or our email exitthedonutpodcast@gmail.com. Our website, exitthedonut.wordpress.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.
Are you coming to the tree? Are they strung up a man? They say you're running free. Strange things still happen to you, stranger, wouldn't you?